Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
Hour number two on FST. Got Dennis Stratford coming up here in a minute. He's going to join us to talk about some of the action last night. And this season's outlook for some of these players. But first, DailyRoto.com is putting more than $25,000 on the line for its subscribers this NFL season, entering paid contests on FanDuel and bringing you along for the free roll. Have the chance to win big this year along SportsGrid CEO Jeremy Stein, one of the only men to have won two separate $1 million prizes. So each week we'll select lucky subscribers to sweat with us and split 50% of the profits. No profits that week, no worries. Your name will get tossed back into the hat the following week. Head to dailyroto.com/sweat and learn how to get in on the action and your share of $25,000 in action. That's dailyroto.com/sweat. So here we are. We got Dan Stratford joining us. Dan, how are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing really well. How about yourself?
Perfect. Sound amazing. So you can find Dan on Twitter at Dan Stratford at STRAFFORD. He is going to be here every Saturday morning with George from here on out. So I'm moving over to Sundays, game day stuff, all morning, and I'm doing the midweek show, the weekday show from 8 to 9 every day. So I'm on Fantasy Sports Today 6 days a week. I'm going to concede the seventh for Dan and George. So glad to have you on board, and glad to listen to you going forward every week with George.
I appreciate it. I appreciate the opportunity here, and I appreciate the plug over on Twitter. I know it's a really creative handle, so people may not be able to find it, but I appreciate you sharing.
You're listening to three guys who have absolutely no creative Twitter handles, just names straight up. Mike Blewett, Dan Stratford, George Kurtz, you see what you get. No funny nicknames or anything. So let's talk a little bit of football here, Dan.
Sure.
You know, we obviously had a lot of action last night, and a guy that's been getting appropriate buzz has been Christian McCaffrey. He was great last year as a rookie, even though his rushing numbers don't really jump off the page at you, but he had 115 targets. He caught a million balls, and he'll probably do the same thing this year. But right now, he's 11th off the board in most drafts and PPR formats. He's behind Melvin Gordon, Dalvin Cook, in front of Devontae Freeman, and Joe Mixon. So what are your thoughts, really, on McCaffrey going into 2018?
You know, he's one of those guys that has some mythical tags about him, both on the positive and the negative. You hear a lot about he's not big enough, he's not strong enough to run between the tackles. A lot of that's just old-school football scouting that I don't think really watches McCaffrey run. You hear he's in the best shape of his life, which is always the great thing coming into football season. But he's put on weight, and he's shown this preseason that he can run. And we knew he could. You watch him at Stanford, you knew he could do it. I'm a big fan, and I think he's easy top 10 this year in the running back pool. Those targets should potentially increase, and I don't see him ceding many carries here at this point. I love Christian McCaffrey this year, and I think he's going to be a key part of that offense. So I have no problem drafting him ahead of ADP right now just to get the guy that I want as potentially an RB1 unless you're going, you know, two RBs to start, and then I could see him being your RB2. But I love him this season. I think he's going to have an electric year.
Just once, I want to hear a player say, you know what, all off season I've been eating, I hit the banquet circuit, I haven't had a chance to hit the gym
thing.
At all.
That's
my wife
Penny,
and the
right?
kids, right? I
oh,
can't
really? You're
sleep.
In the best shape of your life? You're a 24-year-old football player. I would hope so, that you're in the best shape of your life.
Guys, I might there, pull right? a hamstring doing this interview, so I am not in the best shape of my life. I have three kids. It's all downhill from here. But it's Rashad Penny right now, putting on like 29 pounds or whatever since he got injured. But yeah, it is a funny thing every year we hear how great of shape everyone is in.
Well, I was a good boy. I went to the gym before the show, like our loyal listener, Steve G. So I got my workout in for the day, and now I'll be eating all day. So anyway, Dan, you and I are going to be together Saturday mornings from 8 to 10. I got to get up early. How dare Mike Cardano make me do that? He's got me up early on Saturdays, and then Sunday afternoon I do 4:30 to 9 for the NFL Fantasy Live, Fantasy Football Live, which is actually a lot of fun to do. So anyway, we've been talking about, speaking of Rashad Penny, Chris Carson. What are you doing here? I mean, I know you say Rashad Penny is, he's getting like 85 pounds, but right. Still at some point he's going to play. You're drafting this weekend. What are you doing? You're drafting Penny, you're drafting Carson. I guess, where are you drafting? How confident, assuming you're drafting Carson first, how confident are you that Carson's going to have this job longer than, let's say, Halloween?
I'm not, and I'll be honest, I actually drafted Penny a bunch in July best ball drafts that I did, so I was unhappy to see one talk coming out of Seattle that Carson was going to be as involved as he was, and then the injury obviously solidifying Carson's role. I just don't see this offense being dynamic enough that they're going to stay pat. I think they're going to have a lot of moving parts, a lot of pieces that they try to work in and out. So this seems like over time it's going to be a timeshare. Now, with that said, though, Carson's going way down at, 39th or 40th for running backs. I'm comfortable taking flyers down here on guys, again, in season-long or best ball more so, but I'm comfortable taking a risk here on Carson because he's going to be at least involved in those first 3 or 4 weeks. If I can get off the mat and start at 3-1, that's huge. And if Carson's going to be the one for those weeks, I'll take the risk that in weeks 5, 6, and 7, I can find someone on the waiver wire or I can make a trade to get a different running back. I'm not big on handcuffing. I don't want to draft both of them. But I think that if you believe in Carson for week 1 through 4 and then Penny works himself back into game shape, gets back into the flow, and maybe by, like you said, Halloween, that's when a switch or at least a RBBC comes. I'll take the risk on Carson at 39th overall, right in line with, you know, the Duke Johnson, CJ Andersons, Nick Chubbs of the world. I'd much rather have Carson over those three.
So another game to move over to is, and it's been a little tough to get a read on these two guys, the veteran wide receivers in Denver. Case Keenum arriving as the new quarterback, which should at least, at the very least, stabilize their quarterback play from a year ago. You got Royce Freeman, a rookie running back who people like to be the long-term solution there. They also drafted a couple of young guys in Cortland Sutton and Deshaun Hamilton, who may be the heir apparent to these two guys. But right now, it feels like and seems like Emmanuel Sanders is a guy that you can get at some pretty good value. Right now, the 33rd wide receiver off the board, Demaryius Thomas, all the way up at 18. One could suggest that their numbers would look similar. So give me your thoughts specifically on Sanders, but you can expand on both wide receivers if you like.
Yeah, you look back at their numbers over the Peyton Manning years, and they're gigantic, right? The targets are through the roof, and the conversion rate is high for both of them with good reason. They had a all-pro Hall of Fame quarterback throwing the football. Last year, you look at the numbers, and they were terrible because the quarterback play in Denver was awful. And I think that anyone who looks at the guys behind Case Keenum, Paxton Lynch, and so on, knew that they needed to bring someone in, and they need to draft somebody, and they need to move forward. I like both of them for the value they're at right now. I like Manny Sanders a little bit more. I think that the dynamic connection they can have on offense could be a little bit higher. But to your point, I think the youngsters there are intriguing. And I think that they might push for some more targets than people are expecting. Manny's at 35th for wide receivers last time I checked. I like it. I do think that there are better values on the board for wide receivers. If I go even further to a Robbie Anderson for upside, a Nelson Aguilar to start the year. So I'm not running to draft a Manny Sanders, but I do like that they should have much better production than they did last season with Case Keenum under center.
All right. So, Dan, remember that question I just asked you about Chris Carson and Rashad Penny?
Yes, sir.
I'll ask you the same question for Tampa Bay. Peyton Barber, Ronald Jones, go.
I don't know what to make of Tampa Bay. I often get their entire situation wrong. I don't know what that offense is going to be with Fitzpatrick. I don't know what that offense is going to be when they get Jameis Winston back. But it seems as though Barber is the way to go right now. I I don't have a good read here. I'll admit that. I don't feel overly confident in either of them as a long-term solution as your starting running back on your fantasy team. But it does feel like Barber's the kind of guy who could get enough volume across the season to be, you know, that flex or RB3 guy that you're playing on matchup, guy you're playing on injury. So definitely worth drafting. I don't know what do you think, George? Like, do you think this offense is one that's going to be as dynamic as we think it can be, or do you think it disappoints a little bit? I don't know how to really gauge them right now in the offseason.
I don't think anybody knows how to gauge them now. I mean, you got Fitzpatrick starting. The schedule is not friendly at all to Tampa Bay, especially in the first part of the season.
Right.
And Mike and I talked about it earlier. You got New Orleans, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh. Well, Fitzpatrick's in there. Then you go to Chicago, bye at Atlanta. Good luck.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I think it's sort of a messy. I was surprised Cutter wasn't fired during the offseason. I thought they'd go with the new coaching staff. And I wonder if next year, guys, if Cutter's gone, remember, Winston is pretty much playing for a contract, too. I wonder if this is just if you want to call it a rebuild, a smash up and start from scratch, but I wonder if everyone's gone after this season.
That's what I think, actually, to interject here for a sec, Dan. I think if I had to put money down now on the first coach gone, it could be Dirk Cutter. George and I just went over the schedule. There's a possibility they could be 0-5 with having used both quarterbacks, an offensive line that isn't going to help either running back. I think at the end of the day, you can have either one of these guys to piece together a few weeks. I don't think either of them are going to be that effective. This team's come in last place 5 of the last 6 seasons. I think it's going to be 6 of 7 because they're in a good division. And I think they have a tough schedule, especially to start. So I think it's all going to unravel. Quarterback, coach, and GM are all tied at the hip, which is why they didn't make any of those major moves to either the head coach position or the QB. And I think this is all blown up at the end of the year.
I'm a big fan of Pro Football Focus offensive line rankings when it comes to trying to scout out running backs I'm targeting that may not be top of the heap guys. Tampa Bay right now projected at 22nd. That's not going to get it done for average running backs, right? Like, that's the whole Cowboys thing with Zeke Elliott a couple years ago. Why draft him when your offensive line is elite? Anybody can run behind it. Well, it's the same the other way. When you have a bad offensive line, the running backs need to be that much better. Look at Saquon Barkley. Here is a situation with Tampa Bay that I just don't see the upside. So I'm probably staying away from this offense. And I love Mike Evans. Like, as a physical specimen, as a wide receiver, I love their wide receivers there, but I can't trust that offense right now.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I just don't. I think Mike's got a point. I think that whole team is going to start from, especially if Ronald Jones doesn't pan out. I think the GM's gone. Coach is gone. Sure. Winston's gone. Everyone's gone. And they'll just blow it up there.
I don't think Cutter's going to survive. I think Thanksgiving is like his best bet.
Mike, I was surprised he made it this far. I thought I have no idea how he made it through last season.
I think it's because he's tied at the hip with the GM and Jameis. So if the GM were to make a move there, it would have been throwing dirt on his own grave.
Could be. And maybe that's why the owner's going to get rid of all of them. Speaking of an owner that did get rid of everybody and brought back Chucky to Oakland. Is Chucky going to figure out what's wrong with Derek Carr here, Dan? Can we trust Derek Carr in fantasy?
If we go in like the way back machine to 1997, sure. But I have so many reservations about Gruden there running that team. And I like Derek Carr as a gunslinger, especially West Coast games. You talked about the DFS world, you know, the late game hammers trying to play some of those 4 o'clock games in certain slates. I just, again, the offense they've put together there, I'm not really sure where it all comes to be. You look at that throw, what was it, to Amari Cooper last night? Cooper had his man beat. I mean, it was an amazing pattern, had him beat by 2 steps, and Carr underthrew him. And that's the sort of throw that should be night and day for him to just make out there in the world. And I really worry about him being the guy we expect him to be. I think he may have overshot his actual talent on the big season a couple of years ago. Last year we saw it come back down to earth. The guy that I'm looking at on that team more than anybody is Marshawn Lynch. I can't believe I'm saying that, but I feel like he's almost free in drafts. And with Gruden there, I see it as a potential, like, just, hey, we're going to smash mouth because we have to. That's how football is played, gentlemen. And we get into that world. I don't know if you guys saw it. It looks like Josh Gordon was just taken off the non-injury football list. So he's been activated by the Browns, which is
I drafted him
going
in a
to
big draft a couple of weeks ago. So I needed
well, and today, how many drafts are going on? People are seeing that you're going to see him fly up at ADP because he's now active. But I do you trust Mike? Do you trust Gruden? Do you trust that offense, or do you see Carr staying pretty much middle of the pack to lower end of the pack when it comes to starting QBs?
If I had to put a percentage on how much I trust John Gruden, it's south of 20%.
Yeah.
I didn't think he was a great coach last time around. I think he's a very good offensive mind as a head coach. I think he won with Tony Dungy's team, and it went south after that. So there are other factors, obviously, mitigating circumstances, but I'm not a believer. He came in right out of the gate and was like, I'm going to throw it back. I don't need all this data or data. And he started trying to make jokes like that. I know he's an entertainer to some extent, but I think you need the analytics, John, and it's not just fantasy football players. It's people in your front office trying to feed you data that will put your players in the best position. I have always been of the opinion that Derek Carr got a little bit too much too soon. I think he's a decent quarterback. I don't think he's much more than that. I don't expect him to be an all-pro or a star quarterback for this league and for that long, and I think they're bought in on him for maybe a little bit too long. I'm not a buyer on the Raiders this year. I think it's fair for you to say, though, that there's value with Marshawn Lynch because the offensive line is still good, not great, and he's right. Going 33rd off the board around guys like Rex Burkhead, who's got a knee issue, Chris Thompson, who admitted himself that he's probably not going to be full strength till November. I don't know why he did that, but he did say it. Duke Johnson is right behind him and Jamal Williams behind him. The only other guy in that range that I do like is Carlos Hyde over Marshawn Lynch, but as you said, you're getting him as an RB3, in some cases maybe an RB4. I think it's an appropriate risk to take with a decent offensive line.
Agreed.
So that's it for Dan Strafford. He's going to be here every Saturday morning from 8 to 10 with George on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Again, hit him up on Twitter at Dan Strafford. No funny nicknames from any of the three of us. I said that earlier. So looking forward to it. George is a great guy to work with sometimes, but nonetheless, on those good days, you'll be happy that you're working with him.
I look
forward
to it.
That just hurts.
Yeah. Sorry. I had to throw him under the bus, Dan. I had to. Thanks, man. We'll talk to you again soon. You listen to Dan here every Saturday on FNTSY Radio. George and I will be back right after this.
Like a great pass rusher, the Roto experts will help you sack your fantasy football competition. When you register for their exclusive Edge fantasy package, you get a cheat sheet generator, plus a player database with sortable projections and rankings from the best in the business. And you can join the fantasy conversation in the 24/7 Slack chat channel. Visit rotoexperts.com to register for the exclusive Edge fantasy package and enter the promo code FNTSY and you get a 10% discount. That's the rotoexperts.com exclusive Edge fantasy football package, promo code FNTSY.
Back in. We're back in. Sean Engel producing. He always serenades us back out of break. It's a unique style that I like. It's different, but I like it. So we're back. We're talking. We're going around the league still. We just talked about a whole bunch of players with Dan Strafford here every Saturday now on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Chris Warren has been sort of a fantasy superstar for preseason, George, but Gruden has said a lot of positive things about Doug Martin during this camp, and we just got done talking about Marshawn Lynch. So I really see Chris Warren as like I don't even know if he's a draft and stash in redraft leagues. I think he's a draft and stash for long-term leagues, keepers, things like that, if you can get him late enough.
Once again, I mean, you want to take Warren in the 14th round? I always assume drafts are 16 rounds. I don't know why. I think that's pretty standard if you have five reserve spots. So if you want to take him in round 14 before your kickers, before your Ds, there are no bad 14th round picks. I think you said it earlier. Odds are you're going to drop about 4 to 6 players on your team anyway. Yep. So you want to take a complete dartboard shot, go ahead. You know, you're going to drop it the week 1 or week 2 anyway. Would I do it? Probably not. not in a 12-team league. You know, you're talking about a 16, 18-team league, we can talk. But a 10, 12-team league, no. But I don't blame anybody who does. I don't think there are any bad 14th round picks, unless you're taking somebody who's not in the NFL anymore. You know, that would be bad. But other than that, I'm good with it, you know, as long as you're willing to move
like
on.
Eric Decker will, like Eric Decker will be.
Sure. Yeah. Or Kenny Britt or Malcolm Mitchell or anybody else that's a wide receiver for New England who doesn't seem to be able to make it. But like I said, I have no problem with that, Mike, as long as you take him at the appropriate time and are willing to move on at the appropriate time.
Yeah. Agreed. So speaking of those Patriots, they went out there last night. We talked a little bit about their game earlier in relation to Christian McCaffrey, but you know, the wide receiver thing here, the running back thing, you and I talk about, I feel like every year we just talk about the same thing. We don't really want anything to do with it because it's too complicated, and I don't know, they're not playing Sonny Michel and they're not playing Rex Burkhead all that much, so there's a lot of opportunities for us to sort of screw up in the running back position. But at the wide receiver position, we have a whole bunch of guys that could see value for short periods of time. But the reality is we're waiting around for Edelman in week 4, and can Hogan really be a season-long threat? Because last year he caught 41 passes. We had good stretches, but smaller back, we may run into some issues with him from a health standpoint. So give me your thoughts, really, on this New England wide receiving core.
Chancey? How about that? That's pretty much where I say the New England wide receiver core. It's so hard for me to trust anyone outside of Brady and Gronk in New England. And I don't know if that'll ever change. That's what the offense is built around. It's what they want to use. But they need one of these receivers to step up because they need someone to be a threat here, especially with Edelman out, that are going to keep defenses somewhat honest here. Hogan's a decent wide receiver. Yeah, he's a decent outside threat, but, man, who's going to line up opposite him? Is it Dorsett? I mean, really? And do we trust him at all? Cordero Patterson is a returner. You already mentioned Decker, Berrios, all those other guys, these no-names they have here. I think they're going to run a lot of two tight end sets with Gronk and Dwayne Allen. And Dwayne Allen could still be I wouldn't draft him in fantasy, but he could still be somewhat of a threat down the field. But I think this is, in some ways, I think this is a work in progress because they're waiting for Edelman to come back. They're waiting for Sonny Michel to get healthy. They drafted him in the first round for a reason. You know, and I got to think maybe this is going to be the year they were going to rely more on the running game, take some of the pressure off of Tom Brady, because why else would they have done that? But now he's banged up. Burkhead has the tear in his knee. You know, James White, we all know, is better at catching the ball out of the backfield. I mean, this could be back to what New England does all the time. You know, each and every week it'll be somebody different. Outside of Gronk, outside of Edelman, you'll trust him. You're probably starting Hogan week in and week out as well, but I think he'll be more up and down. But outside of Gronk, especially in the first 4 weeks of the season, I think it could be somebody different every week that ends up being their fantasy superstar.
And I think Gronk, you're really going to see an increase in value for him in those first 4 weeks. I think they're going to be unabashedly getting him the ball, getting it to him as often as possible, and using him up for those first 4 weeks. And then when Edelman comes back, they can maybe take their foot off the gas pedal a little bit. I think we saw last year on some level, finally, they were really trying to manage Gronk down the stretch. You know, like in week 15, they really needed him against the Steelers. So in that second half, they fed him the ball. But in the game, in the week before that, he was out. Week 17, he sat out against Buffalo. He had a good game, but I remember they were managing snap counts for him at points during the season. And I think that's why you saw him contemplating retirement, because I thought he realized that it's a tough slog for him at this point to try to get through the season. So I think while Gronk is going to be a great tight end all throughout the year, that first 4 weeks he'll be a DFS and season long darling.
I would agree. You know, in that, the two quarterback league, one of the home leagues, I drafted Gronk. I had an extra draft pick, so I took a shot. I almost never have Gronk. Matter of fact, Mike, to be honest, it's maybe the first time I've ever had Gronk, because generally, I think you know, I won't spend a top pick on a tight end. But having extra draft picks, I did it. And so I know he's going to get hurt early on. It'll be the end of Gronk for me. But that being said, I agree. I think they're going to be, but defenses know this too. that the offense, at least till Edelman comes back, is probably going to be filtered through Gronk. That being said, what do? He's still a mismatch against anybody one-on-one. Are you going to double cover him off the bat? You know, are you going to bracket him and leave one-on-one outside with Hogan, who can get deep? You know, and so can Dorsett for that matter. They can get deep. They just can't, they're just not reliable, especially Dorsett, over and over again. So I'm very curious to see how defenses play this. You know, are they going to try and take Gronk out of the game and force Brady to use somebody else? It should be interesting how this plays out in the early going here. But generally, I mean, it's just so hard for me to believe New England won't be able to make this work, that they won't be able to move the, you know, matriculate the ball up and down the field to see how it works out here. I'm looking at the New England schedule now in the early going here. You know, it's not first game's against Houston, good defense. Second game's at Jacksonville, very good defense. Detroit, you know, hey, you got the little, do we want to call it a revenge game already for the new coach there? Then at Miami, Indianapolis, KC, it's not incredibly difficult, but the first four games, they do get Houston and Jacksonville.
Yeah, and the running back position, you know, it looks like Gillislee and Jeremy Hill are battling for a spot. Jeremy Hill left with a, appeared to be an ankle injury last night. Don't know the severity of that yet. If you've heard anything about it, feel free to update me, but I haven't seen anything more than, like, they're going to take a look at it today. But those two appear to be battling. Sonny Michel will be good to go. They did lose their first-round draft pick, their highest draft pick this year, Isaiah Wynn. They were going to put a rookie at left tackle, which would have been an experiment in and of itself. Now, they have the best assistant coach maybe in the entire league in Dante Scarnecchia, who has made I almost said a phrase that was going to require a swear, but he's really made another man's trash is another man's treasure. Let's put it that way. Scarnecchia has made trash into treasure in a few instances, but nonetheless, he's going to be without Isaiah Wynn there, and they continue on. So as far as a running back is concerned, the only guy that I've – look, every year people are going to try and talk me into James White, who I think is a really good player. But do you think he can catch 50 balls this year? That's about where projections have him. That seems like a pretty decent value, but you're even going through it, like, how much value is that relative to New England? He's going to be behind targets with touches and guys like Gronk and Hogan and Burkett and Edelman. Like, so then he's fifth on the team in touches. At some point, it's too hard to predict what is the James White week.
Well, this is why I avoid New England. I avoid the New England running backs. I want nothing to do with them. You know, I'm not going to gamble. I think 55 touches for catches for James White is probably about right, especially with all the injuries. You know, Michelle's going to probably miss a couple of games the regular season. Burkhead's got the tear in his knee. Lord knows what that brings. The Hill ankle injury, he's fine. That shouldn't be an issue at all with New England. But so he's there. You know, Gillislee, I think, gets cut personally, and they're not going to keep seven running backs. Ralph Webb probably goes too. Bolton could play special teams. You know, at one point I thought maybe Jeremy Hill would get dealt to a team in need of a running back, but now I think he actually makes the team as the fourth running back, especially with Michelle banged up. So and Burkett banged up for that man. I think they may have to make sure they have enough healthy bodies there. I only drafted James White in one league, and I didn't mean to, Mike. It's just that he was there my last pick. What am I going to do? But in that league, it's not even a PPR league. That's why he was there. It was just, you know, but I had to take a running back in round, whatever, it was 14, 15, so I took him. I don't hold him in great esteem, just like the reasons you mentioned. Hard to trust him week in, week out. He's a guy I'll probably never start outside of injuries, with the exception of a bye week filler, because that's how I'll approach it, because I don't trust New England. I just don't trust New England backs. I want to stay away from them. I do not want to play the Bill Belichick guessing game.
And there probably will be a time where you'll just end up cutting James White because you'll need a spot. You know what I mean? It's entirely possible. You've drafted him with your last pick. It's basically no draft capital. Maybe there's a Pat's homer up there that will scoop him up off the waiver wire. But, you know, if you don't get anything out of James White for a month, you're going to have to move on because somebody will get hurt. You'll have a bye week. And you know, he's that kind of player. As good an NFL player as he is, I like him way more as an NFL player than I do as a fantasy option. I think there is value for him in fantasy, but it is a guessing game, as George said, and I think we've made that abundantly clear. So let's wrap up with the Panthers. Well, first of all, C.J. Anderson, former host of ours, used to talk a lot about C.J. Anderson. He thought he was going at crazy value, thought he can get 200 touches. I don't hear that too much. It seems like a reasonable theory, but I don't hear it that much. The Panthers sound so in on McCaffrey that I don't know that there's any reason to have C.J. Anderson as more than a handcuff, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there's more value than I'm letting on. I just haven't heard the buzz around C.J. Anderson that you'd hear for some other guys in his position.
Now, the host, the former host, whose name we shall not mention, and I talked about this last week. I was kidding. It was a joke.
Yeah.
A little ha-ha.
Yeah.
Sorry. Little 10:30 a.m. humor.
Sorry,
I didn't mean to take
you so literally.
No, that's okay. Now I'm hurt, and
I may not
be able to go on. We do wish Kevin well. That's Kevin and I talked about this last week, and I wasn't as high as he was, but I'm on board here. You know, I still think there's a role with C.J. Anderson. Then I understand they want to get McCaffrey more touches, and that's all fine and good. You put him through a tackles too many times, he's not going to last the season. Okay, he's not built like that. He's just not. Hell, regular running backs can't last the season. And more or less somebody like McCaffrey. So I can understand giving him some more touch there, but it's not going to be a whole bunch more. I still think at the goal line, it's going to be C.J. Anderson when Cam's not doing it himself. You know, so that's an issue there. And Cam got banged up last night, too. This guy never learns. Even in preseason games, he won't get down. It's going to be frustrating. You heard Cam talk about it last night that I knew it was a preseason game. I was trying to think of the value. It's all went through his head while the play is going on. You have to know it's before coming into the game. Preseason game, I'm not taking hits. Yeah, but still, he got banged up. So it's always going to concern me about Cam. That he takes unnecessary hits. C.J. Anderson has value. He's more than just a handcuff. He's a better Jonathan Stewart as far as Jonathan Stewart last year at that point in his career. He's not somebody I'm dying to get. I'm not taking him around 7, around 8, but he's there in round 11, round 12. You need backup running backs. You need bye week fillers, guys who might be able to get you a smattering of points. And if during that bye week he has to get that touchdown that week, I think he'll score 6 to 8 touchdowns this year because I think he'll be that guy at the goal line. I think so the value is there for me. Like I said, he's not someone I'm looking to get if I have run CMC. I'm not looking to get him as a backup. He's a guy I think has value on his own, and he's more than just a handcuff. So he's, like I said, his value to me is somewhere around round 10, round 11, where we're pretty much taking any running back with a pulse. And he has more than a pulse. Like I said, he will be 6 to 8 touchdowns is probably too many. It's probably more around the 4 to 6 range. But I think he has value there. I'm not going to forget about C.J. Anderson.
44th running back off the board right now in PPR leagues, right behind a bunch of pass catchers like G. Bernard, actually Peyton Barber in there, Theo Riddick and Bilal Powell as well. We'll get to the Jets in a minute as well, and James White in that category as well. It's funny, we just kind of talked about a whole bunch of these guys this morning, but that makes sense. You know, we don't need to spend a lot of time on Todd Gurley and Le'Veon Bell, right? You want to draft that guy one, you want to draft him two, go nuts. They're both going to carry the ball a lot, touch the ball a lot. They should be wildly productive. I have Bell one because it's been very rare that a guy goes back-to-back repeating as the top running back in fantasy football. So I'm going to go with Bell because since he was two last year, he's one this year for me. I had him two last year, so I also feel a little bit of guilt. And I stupidly, not my fault, but I stupidly draft David Johnson. I should have just drafted Bell last year. I might have won something in one of my leagues. Anyway, I digress. So it makes sense that we talk about these guys in the mid-range there, right? Because this is where the debate comes, and it's where the weekly debates come. You know you're going to start Todd Gurley and Le'Veon Bell every week, but do I start because I rostered Peyton Barber and C.J. Anderson as my 3-4 backs? Who do I start from week to week? You're going to have that debate. It's going to be matchup dependent. And you might not want to start Barber early in the season. That's the unfortunate part for Peyton Barber. We talk about running backs by committee where guys are splitting touches week by week. I think Peyton Barber might get the ball right out of the gate, and they're going to be so bad he's going to lose his job. And then Ronald Jones will get it, hopefully, when things ease up after the bye week.
Yeah, that's what I said earlier. There could be a punishment. He could get, I think, what was the phrase? Had 13 carries, 42 yards. And because the games are tougher, he'll lose his job. Through no fault of his own, nobody else would have done anything different. But he'll lose his job. They'll go to Ronald Jones. But it's also, as we when we talk with Dan, now it seems like all three of us are in agreement that Cutter could be gone. GM could be gone. Winston could be gone. The GM drafted Jones. They're going to want to get him in there. He's going to want to see him play. It's sort of going down with the ship. If Jones plays well, maybe his job is saved. If not, no, he's done anyway. You know, they know it, and it's also, they know what they have in Barber. He's not going to be a superstar. He may be the best running back now, but he's not. You know, Ezekiel Elliott, Dave Johnson, Bell, Gurley, come on, whatever. He's not one of these guys. He's not. So they're going to want to see what they have in Jones eventually. It's a matter of when is eventually. It's probably right now. It's maybe once Winston comes back and they put it all together with all, everybody starting fresh, especially if they get to an 0-3 start.
So there you go. There you have it. That's our thoughts on all these mid-range running backs. You got to take your shots where you think there's value. We're going to come back after the break, and we'll talk about the Lions' wide receiving core, Tate Jones-Galladay. It's really where you see the value. Theo Riddick, obviously, is a pass catcher as well. We'll talk about those guys. And we'll talk about the Jets and the red-headed QB of the NYJ. And what's going on at running back there? It seems to have turned tide from Crowell to Powell. So we'll talk about that when we come back as well. It's Mike and George on FST. Back right after this.
From the NFL to the NBA, DailyRoto.com is the place to win millions in daily fantasy. You can get the best DFS NFL coverage all season long for a price of $129.99 or dominate the entire daily fantasy sports realm with the Elite Package at $59.99 per month. If you use the promo code FNTSY, you get 10% off your Daily Roto package. Go to DailyRoto.com, pick your NFL or Elite Package, enter promo code FNTSY, and you'll be on your way to becoming the next Daily Roto millionaire.
Welcome back to Roto Experts in the Morning.
I got it, George. It's crazy. Drafting and doing shows at the same time. Thank you for covering me on
that. The draft hasn't even started yet.
I know. The guy told me online. I made sure that. So here, I'll explain to everybody. It's a little look inside the life of Mike Blewett right now. Story time. I got two drafts going on. One is starting in 20 minutes. It's a Grand Street Tavern draft. Good friends are there. But many of us in this industry have home studios, and I had the choice to do this one at home or to go into Manhattan, where the draft also is, do the show in the studio, first hour I'd be juggling both, then go down for the draft. The problem is, big family party later this afternoon, right near the house. So it was going to be a lot of travel. Somebody's playing some music for me. Story time. So... This is good.
That's good, Sean.
This sets the right tone. So the problem was I was going to have to go all the way in there and only be at the draft for about 80 minutes or so before I had to catch the train, come back home. Tomorrow, I also am doing a show and a draft right afterwards and have to be back to take my kids to a minor league baseball game, the Long Island Ducks. Going to be great. Can't wait. But I had all this stuff going on, and I basically had to choose which day to go into the city. I chose tomorrow because it made more sense aligned with the draft, where I was in relation to the train to Penn Station, and all this kind of stuff. So that's why I chose to be online. But the major decision that I made was based on the fact that one of the guys, when I asked the group, can I just do this online, said, yeah, no problem. He was wrong. So that's the complication. There you go. Story time is over. Do you understand now, George? Do you have any further questions?
Well, first of all, the Long Island Ducks are independent league, not minor league, just to let you know that.
Sorry, fair point, fair clarification. I'm aware of this, please. I have to do every detail of the story? I'm pretty good with the details. I didn't have to just suggest that they're not an actual minor league team. Yes, independent league. Excuse me. They play the Lancaster Barnstormers, and they play a whole bunch of the Somerset Patriots. There's a whole... host of characters. There's actually some former major leaguers that play for the Ducks. Lou Ford was there when I played last year. So Bud Harrelson runs it. So I digress. But you understand why I made the decision and now it's creating complications?
So now the next question is, well, if you can't do it online, how are you going to do it?
Dean Martinez, who hosts with me here during the week, I told him as a backup plan, plan B, that in case anything goes wrong online, you're my guy. You're going to feed me when I'm up and whatever. They're saying that I will be able to see the picks as they go. I'm dubious, but they're saying that I'll be able to see the picks as I go. And I pick third overall. Dean knows who I want there. So who would you pick third overall? PPR league.
Ah, it's funny you should say this. I've dropped Ezekiel Elliott in my rankings.
Why?
Well, no Travis Frederick. Zach Martin's banged up. This team is coming apart at the seams. I mean, this team is all about the... I'm not a panic. I've been saying this the whole time along. This team's not very good, especially on offense. And now you're taking away their identity. I mean, their second-round pick, Connor Williams, it looks like he can't play in the NFL. He's having all sorts of issues, so they don't have their top backup. Like I said, I think this team's got problems. Zach Martin, I expect to play week one, but they need that offensive line to be the offensive line, the best in the NFL, to control the clock, and they're not going to have that. No one knows when Travis Frederick's coming back from this, the autoimmune disease. It could be weeks, could be months. You know, I've heard several doctors say there's a better chance he misses the entire season than he does coming back in just two or three games. And that lets you know how serious this is here. And this is the first injury before the season even starts. You know, what if Dak gets hurt? Ezekiel Elliott gets hurt? What if Tyron Smith, who had a back injury last year, once again, the same issues? What if that knee injury that Zach Martin has right now isn't going to go away so quickly? Too many problems for me. That was enough for me to move Elliott out of number three. I'll take David Johnson. I assume Gurley and Bell go 1-2.
Yeah, I hate you right now.
That's okay.
Everybody hates me. You're up in my head. You're up in my head now. You're up in my head.
Like I said, I just dropped him this week. After I heard the injury, and once I heard Frederick when I was going to be out, and I think it's going to be, I imagine Dallas puts him on IR. I have to think, and he misses the first eight games. I think that's a smart move, and then you let him get fined for the second half of the season. That was enough for me. I mean, don't get me wrong. I haven't taken him out of the first round, but I would certainly take David Johnson ahead of him now, and Barkley's about 50-50.
I think I'm going to stick with Zeke. And I accept everything that you're saying, and it still gives me concern, but I have equal concern about Arizona's offensive line, which even with this isn't as good as Dallas's. And they have a quarterback situation that is good. Is it as good as Dallas's? Would you say that their quarterback situation is as good as Dallas's?
If Bradford starts the entire season, it's better. The problem is, we all know that's sort of the oxymoron, right? Bradford starts the entire season, sure. Once that doesn't happen, I think I'd probably, if I had a choice, I'd rather have Dak, because at least I know he's going to play.
So, you know, putting that together, Zeke is going to out-touch everybody carrying the ball this year. I think that's
easily
a fair bet.
Except for Le'Veon Bell.
Carries wise, I think he's
the
still.
Steelers are going to grind Bell into the ground.
No doubt. 400 touches last year probably happens again. You know, it's, I think that's the way they're going to go. So I think Zeke Elliott has more carries than anyone, certainly not touches. I think David Johnson could out touch him slightly, but I think it's almost a dead heat because David Johnson could see 30, 40 more catches, but 40 less carries. So I think that's about a dead heat. I'll slightly lean towards Zeke, towards efficiency, because I do like the fact that their offensive line is that much better. I have to bet on an offensive lineman with an autoimmune condition with no timetable whatsoever. Guillain-Barré syndrome is serious, and there was no telling that he was going to get it. And obviously he's been suffering what they thought were stingers, but now clearly it's much more serious than that. So I'm still going to stick with Zeke. I accept everything that you said, but I'll stick with it just because I talked myself through this six different ways, and now here we are. So it's Zeke at three, unless Bell or Gurley drops. You know, in fact, Corey Parson drafts right in front of me. So there's a chance that I'll end up with Todd Gurley. I think Bell goes one, and then it could be Zeke Elliott two, and it could be Gurley at three. So, you know, we'll see. So there you go.
You're trying to say notes. Corey's a homer?
Yeah. Corey's the biggest homer.
He is. He certainly is.
He like curses Jason Garrett, and then he says he loves him as a coach. I was like, you do? Like, you swear that guy up and down, but like off air, and then you get on air, and he loves Jason Garrett. I'm like, why?
I love Corey to death. He's a lot of fun to work with, but man, he is certainly a Dallas homer. And I'm a Cowboy fan. Yeah, you listen to the promos with Carton trying to say that Tony Romo's a Hall of Famer. I'm a big Tony Romo supporter. Love Tony Romo with the Cowboys. He's not a Hall of Famer. You know, it's funny.
That's right. I had that discussion with Corey about the quarterbacks, and he was leaning towards Romo being the best Dallas quarterback of all time. I was like, you don't really think that, do you? Like, he's third. He's squarely third at best. I'm going to put him third because I can't.
Tony Romo is Danny White. Exactly what Romo was going to say. Danny White.
I would say he's better than Danny White, but you're even downgrading Romo.
Danny White was good. Danny White he was good.
He was good, but I'd even give Romo that. I was literally going to say I put him right above Danny White. I don't think I'm not bashing Danny White, but like Staubach and Aikman are locked down Hall of Famers. Romo isn't a Hall of Famer in my mind. Those guys are well in front of him. Like, I think there's a good gap there, and I'm not bashing Tony Romo to say that.
Yeah, I said I'm a very very strict Hall of Fame grader, and yes, in my mind, most of the Hall of Fames, they're the Hall of Very Goods now anyway. They're not the Hall of Fames anymore. People get in who shouldn't be in. Romo was a very good quarterback, and yes, he played on some bad teams, and if not for him, Dallas would have been worse. But he also made mistakes when he didn't have to make. He's just not a Hall of Fame quarterback. He was a very good quarterback. I enjoyed watching him play. I truly believe he's the reason Dallas won a lot of those games. He made plays that really nobody else could have made there. Would he have been a possible Hall of Fame if he played on better Dallas teams? Possibly. If he played on the Aikman teams or Staubach teams where they had great defenses and great players. But he also would have made mistakes that Aikman and Staubach didn't make. You know, he just would. That's the kind of quarterback he was. I think Dez Bryant certainly wishes Romo was still there because he needed someone like Romo who would put up the 50-50 ball to him, where Dak won't do that. You know, Dallas is so coached against that now. If your receiver's not open, don't throw on the ball. You know, everything. Make sure you retain possession of the ball. Just different than worst styles of coaching. Jason Garrett needs to go. I can't see how anybody's really defending him. I mean, I know he's got one of the third most wins as far as a coach in Cowboy history. Actually, maybe second most, come to think of it, which it just says about longevity more than anything else.
Just longevity, not how good he's been. Dude. I mean, some point you're going to be the winningest something.
You watch the Cowboys' offense. Everything is short. I mean, I understand it's preseason, they're not showing anything, but everything is within 10 yards of a line of scrimmage, and this has been going on for years. Especially under Dak Prescott, they don't take too many deep shots, which means everyone plays closer to the line of scrimmage. It's all vanilla, boring. You know, I may be a fantasy guy, but I'm not the greatest X's and O's guy, Mike. And when I can watch the Cowboys and I can tell you what play they're going to run, something's wrong. Because I should not be able to do this and be right 80% of the time. I mean, I just shouldn't be able to. And if I can do it, you know the opposing defenses know what's coming. And it's just, like I said, Garrett grew up under Jimmy Johnson. Right, he played under Jimmy Johnson. And Jimmy Johnson will tell you back then they pretty much only had 5 running plays. You know why? Because they were damn good at those 5 running plays. And they could just do them over and over again. This is not the same Cowboys team. You don't have Michael Irvin and Alvin Harper on the outside keeping the safeties off the line of scrimmage. You need to be more inventive here. That's why what Dez Bryant said, when he went on a little Twitter rampage, you know, he shouldn't have said what he said, but he wasn't all wrong either. Dallas has a very vanilla offense. It's very boring. It's very dull. And it's just what it is. But back to that, Romo, listen, I really liked Romo. As a Cowboy fan, really did. Not a Hall of Famer.
I'm with you. So, all right, on to the next player. As I continue to get a barrage of texts and chats from my draft, it's super confusing. I'm telling everybody out there. We didn't talk about the Lions receiving core, and I would like to do that because I'm a huge Golden Tate fan. I have him on Dynasty League. He's the type of guy I like to target, especially in larger leagues like the one I'm about to be in a few minutes, where it's a 20-man roster. There's no trades, so it's a little bit more best ball style. You do have a $1,000 fab budget, but you're not going to be moving guys around. So Golden Tate is the type of player that I like simply because he's bankable and when the waiver wire is going to be super thin, I need guys like that I can really count on. forget the fact that you and I would term ourselves as relatively conservative drafters in a league of that format, you're going to take a few shots, right? Like a Josh Gordon, like some of the running backs we've talked about today. But I really need some solid players so that it doesn't all go sideways. And Golden Tate is the type of guy that I like. And so that's one. But two, I will freely admit that when I started doing research from this year, I had, there's always that one player that kind of escapes you because maybe you didn't have him on a lot of teams. I had almost forgotten how effective Marvin Jones was last year. And I admit that I underrate him as a player. I'm not in love with him as a player, but he put it up last year as a wide receiver one, and I just wonder if he can do that back-to-back. So give me your thoughts on those two, plus Kenny Golladay, the second-year wide receiver who people really seem to like making an impact this year.
Well, Tate and Jones are almost opposites of each other. Tate catches all the balls. Jones seems to catch the touchdowns. They both have value. Pretty much, he's like one's going around four, the next one goes around five. You know, so I'm good with either one of them. I think Stafford makes both quality wide receivers, both wide receiver twos. Golladay could be a problem here, and I don't own Golladay in any league right now. Even though last year I think I owned him in two or three because I do like the guy. I do have him in a dynasty league, so I shouldn't say I don't own him. I do. Is this going to be his year? Yeah, you know, where now he's gonna. He's very slow last year. I think he had two touchdowns week one, then really I think he may have only had two the rest of the season. You know, pretty much on two catches, too. He's pretty much disappeared after that, got hurt for a bit as well. But is this going to be the year
on their ADPs, Golden Tate is at 20. This is in PPR leagues. Golden Tate at 20, Marvin Jones at 24. Keep in mind, they were both wide receiver ones last year, being drafted as wide receivers two here, and Kenny Golladay at 52, so a wide receiver five.
So once again, the question is, will Kenny Golladay eat into someone's touches here? Will he be the red zone guy? Because Golladay, when I say this, please take this for what I'm saying, not for what he's built like Megatron. He's not Megatron, but he's built like him. So he's a guy who can go up and get the ball in the end zone. You know, the alley-oop play. So that tall target you like in the end zone that Stafford can use here. So I wonder if he's going to end up being that guy, which could hurt Marvin Jones, who caught quite a few touchdowns last year. Golladay can do more than that as well. So he's going to eat into somebody's targets here. You know, especially as the season moves along here, this is going to be a good wide receiver. This is a good wide receiver trio. Tate, Jones, and Golladay. This can be dangerous here. If they can figure out that running game with Blunt, Kerryon Johnson, they have way too many guys here. But if they can figure out just have a legitimate running game here, this offense is going to hum. I don't really like the tight end, Luke Wilson, all that much here. But I like Tate, I like Jones, and I like Golladay. I already said I think Tate and Jones are both wide receiver twos. You said the ADP, that's where they're going, so you're good there. I said most drafts I've seen, it's rounds four and round five, maybe the end of round three, end of round four for both guys. Tate generally goes first, and then Jones, I have no issues with that. Golladay is somebody, he's not a round 14 guy. You can't wait that long. He's a round 12 guy. You're going to have to go out and grab if you believe in him. But he's a guy who has upside.
Yeah, I mean, he's wide receiver five, but really on the fringe of the wide receiver four in a group with Allen Hurns, DJ Moore, Calvin Ridley, Dez Bryant, Kenny Golladay, Mike Williams, Cam Meredith. I'll go another one, and Rashard Matthews beyond that. That group, I'm going to go Mike Williams, most upside, because that's a wide receiver five, end of wide receiver four. I don't have to take a big chance on it. Allen Hurns would be an interesting sort of safe pick there, but I don't think there's much upside. But of that group, I'm going to go Mike Williams. I'd take him over Kenny Golladay personally.
Well, I would as well, because there's a chance that Mike Williams is going to end up being the wide receiver two there, above Tyrell Williams. Now, the only thing that happens, they're both very similar when you think about it, except that I just think that Mike Williams has a chance to surpass Tyrell Williams. I'm not so sure Golladay is going to do that over Jones and or Tate.
True. All right. So we're going to come back at the top of the hour for hour number three of FST when my hair is on fire from doing a draft and hosting a show at the same time. It's Mike and George. Back right after the break.